Too many details often become hard to follow. We call it complicated. It is especially complicated when the details are unfamiliar. If you add the problem that some of those details have been lost in time and lost by the force of nature, the task of sorting out the details becomes much harder. And that's happened in the last two lessons that we've been in, where all this detail is being thrown at us that we could spend eons searching out and discovering and finally not even know because we don't know where the places are. And such is the case with the details of this division of the promised land to the tribes as presented in chapter 14 through 19. To that, and be that as it may, we need to look at the divisions of the land and do our best to set the scene for the living area of these 12 tribes of the nation of Israel. So the writer begins by naming the 29 cities on the southeast portion of Judah's territory toward the land of Edom, down in the Negev, the southeast portion. He is going to name the towns in verse number 20. This is the inheritance of the tribe of the sons of Judah, according to their families. Now the cities at the extremity of the tribe of the sons of Judah, toward the border of Edom, in the south were Kabzeel, and Eder, and Jager, and Kenna, and Dimona, and Abedada, and Kadesh, and Hazer, Ithnan, Ziph, and Telem, and Beeloth, and Hazer, Hethdada, and Kiriath Hezron, Ammon, and Shema, and Moleda, and Hazar-Gadda, and Heshmon, and Beth-Pila, and Hazashurl, and Beersheba, and Bisophia, Bela, and Laim, and Ezium, and El-Tolad, and Chesel, and Harma, and Ziklag, and Magmadan, and Sansana, Lebaoth, and Shelem, Ain, and Rimmon, in all 29 cities with their villages. They are foreign names to me, and many of them we do not even know where those places are. Over time, most of them have been lost to nature's forces. They've been abandoned, destroyed. These cities supported unnamed villages all around them. We don't know where they are. But we know the general area. They were in this area in the Negev, here by the borderline of Edom. Now in the lowlands called the Shephelah, in some versions of the Bible, it calls the lowland Shephelah, and they're in the northeastern part of Judah's territory. Northeastern, this area up in here, this is where we're talking about here, of Judah's territory. The lowlands are the low-lying flat districts. They're flat. And the areas that kind of weave between the central highlands and the Holy Land next to the Mediterranean Sea here in verse 33.
In the lowland, Eshtaol and Zorah, and Ashnab, and Zenoah, and Enganim, Tapia, and Enim, Jamuth, and Adullam, Soko, and Azekah, and Shaarim, and Athaim, Gadara, and Gedeothian, 14 cities with their villages.
Verse 36 mentions these 14 cities, and yet the count of the 14 cities seems to be 15. If you count them back, there's 15. Well, the Greek Septuagint only has 14. It does not contain that name, Jedidiathrim. And more than likely, the addition of the city of Jedidiathrim in this passage was accidentally added into some Hebrew manuscript long after the Greek Septuagint translation was made from those older copies. I hope you understand what I mean by that. The Septuagint was turned into Greek after Alexander the Great had conquered the world. The known world at that time. And so the Jews translated the Hebrew into Greek. After the translation of the Greek was done, this name showed up. It should not have been there. Now the second set of the 16 cities with their villages lay in that actual plain on the western side of Judah's land from north to south. That's this plain that's right here in the middle. It comes up here and it's next to the coast of what we call, this is the Gaza Strip here to this side. Verse 37.
Zena and Hadashim and Migdal Gad and Delian and Mizpah and Jokthiel, Lachish and Boskath and Eglon and Caban and Lamas and Chilis and Gedareth and Beth Dagon and Naamam and Makeda. 16 cities in their villages.
These 9 cities with their villages lay in that southern part of the region of Judah's territory, also on this west side in verse 42.
Libnah and Ether and Ashan and Iphta, and Ashbab, and Nezeb, and Keala, and Akzib, and Marisha. 9 cities with their villages.
There are 3 cities with villages that lay on the Philistine coastline in the land of Judah's territory yet to be conquered. So up in this, let me go ahead and draw it in, yet up in this Gaza Strip that is right here, this Gaza Strip, there's 3 cities that have not been touched by the nation of Israel. That's Ekron with its towns and its villages, from Ekron even to the sea, and all that were on the side of Ashdod with their villages, Ashdod, its towns and its villages, Gaza, its towns and its villages, as far as the brook of Egypt and the great sea, even to its coastline. So here we are from Ekron going down all the way to the brook of Egypt that I talked to you about in last week's lesson. Now there are 11 cities with villages that lay in the mountains of the hill country in verse 48. Now mountains of the hill country are right up in this area where I've got the word Judah. But all this is Judah's land. Some's going to be carved out for Simeon, but around now that's Judah's.
In the hill country, Shamer and Jatter and Soko and Danim and Kiriath Sanim and Adab and Ashterbomb and Ammon and Goshen and Holon and Gilo. 11 cities with their villages.
Now moving on real quickly, because I don't want to spend too much time here. The 9 cities and their villages that lay north of these 11 cities just mentioned in the country around Hebron and all this, we're going to come right up here to the edge.
Arab and Duma and Eshan and Janim and Beth Taphia and Apika and Hamta and Kiriath Arba and Zior, 9 cities with their villages.
So there's also 10 cities with their villages that lay southeast of Hebron. So we're talking just southeast of Hebron right there. Southeast right in here is where these are.
Maon, Carmel, and Ziph, and Jetha, and Jezreel, Jogdim, and Zenoah, Cain, Gibeah, and Timnah, 10 cities with their villages.
We've got 6 cities and their villages that were north of Hebron here in 58.
Halhal, Beth-Zur, and Gedor, and Be'erath, and Beth-Anoth, and El-Tikon, 6 cities with their villages.
There are 2 cities and villages that lay west of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is away from Hebron. West of Jerusalem, Kiriath Baal and Rabbah, 2 cities with their villages. There are 6 cities with their villages that lay in the wilderness between the mountain and the Dead Sea, and that is right here in this area.
In the wilderness, Beth Araba, Midian, Sinekab, and Nibshan, and the city of Salt, and in Jeddah, 6 cities with their villages.
Finally, and I am so sorry at the pronouncing of those names, and you had to wade through them with me. Finally, the writer speaks of the Jebusites near Jerusalem, verse 36. Now, as for the Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the sons of Judah, could not drive them out. So the Jebusites live with the sons of Judah at Jerusalem until this day. Now, that's going to end, and I want to show this to you. Let me show you. Right here is Jerusalem. Right there is Jerusalem. I'm sorry. Right here is Jerusalem. Right here is the Jebusite area. Running right through them right there, which this line comes through, there is Jerusalem, the city of peace that Abraham went and presented his offering to, and north of that was the citadel of the Jebusites. They're not going to conquer that citadel. It is said to be impenetrable. Jebus, who formed that city and fortified it, was the son of an Amorite and a Hittite, and this is a Canaanite city. It is not going to be conquered until David finally comes and conquers it in his 7th year of reign as king. We will find that when we get to 2 Samuel. So with the opening of chapter 16, the writer describes the tribal area for Ephraim. So we've got Judah's land, we get Ephraim's land, chapter 16, verse number 1. Then the lot of the sons of Joseph went from the Jordan at the Jericho to the waters of Jericho on the east of the wilderness, going up from Jericho through the hill country to Bethel. It went from Bethel to Luz and continued to the border of the Archites at Eroth. and it went down westward to the territory of the Japhethites, as far as the territory of lower Beth-horon, even to Gezer, and it ended at the sea. The sons of Joseph, Manasseh, and Ephraim received their inheritance. Now this was the territory of the sons of Ephraim according to their families. The borders of their inheritance eastward was Eroth Adar, as far as upper Beth-horon. Then the border went westward at Mekath on the north, and the border turned about eastward at Tanath Shiloh and continued beyond it to the east of Genoa. And it went down from Genoa to Atharoth and to Narah, and then reached Jericho and came out at the Jordan. From Tabuth, the border continued westward to the brook of Kenon, and it ended at the sea. This is the inheritance of the tribe of Ephraim according to their families, together with the cities which were set apart for the sons of Ephraim in the midst of the inheritance of the sons of Manasseh, all the cities with their villages. But they did not drive out the Canaanites who lived in Gezer. So the Canaanites lived in the midst of Ephraim to this day, and they became forced laborers. Okay, well, interesting enough, the second lot has fallen to Ephraim. Now, just as Caleb had been promised that it would get land, and that land had to fall in the land of Judah, there was also another promise. And that was promised, the land was called Hebron. That was promised by Moses. Ephraim was promised the area of Shechem, not by Moses, but by Jacob. Therefore, the land of Ephraim had to contain Shechem. So the southern border started at the Jordan River here, and it comes up, starts at the Jordan River, and it comes up, it makes a curve up, it comes over, because we're going to get Benjamin up here above Judah. It's going to come back around, it's going to come around, and it's going to come up like this, make some turns, come back around, and come back down. All right. As you notice, well, what happened was, this is really Manasseh's land and Ephraim's land. Let me get a different color here. And Ephraim's land is going to be carved out of it around giving Shechem, which is about right there. Shechem, this is going to be the area for Ephraim. This is the area for Manasseh. It's not going to make Manasseh happy. Not at all. Now, by the way, also give you another thing. It says Bethel to Luz. Why? That's a translation problem, because Luz was the original name of Bethel. And after Jacob had his time there with the Lord, he changed the name of Luz to Bethel. Even though Bethel was used all the way through the book of Genesis, it also tells us in Genesis that Luz's name was changed to Bethel also, by Jacob. So, Gezer is part of Ephraim. However, Joshua did not attack the city of Gezer. If you remember, Gezer's right over here. He didn't attack the city of Gezer because the king of Gezer with his men went down to Lachish and helped fight against them. So they haven't even been to Gezer yet. They haven't taken the land of Gezer, just as this text tells us. Therefore, the Canaanites remained there in Gezer, but the nation of Israel had not forced them out of Gezer yet, and they needed to do that. So moving on, that was fast. What? That has to do with Manasseh, the tribe of Ephraim, which is the brother of Manasseh. So moving on here into chapter 17, which is also a short chapter, the writer describes the tribal area of Manasseh. And so the writer gives the names of the sons of Manasseh and their family divisions. Chapter 17, verse 1. Now this was the lot, this is the third lot that's drawn, for the tribe of Manasseh. For he was the firstborn of Joseph. To Makar, the firstborn of Manasseh, the father of Gilead, there were allotted Gilead and Bashan, because he was a man of war. That's on the east side of the Jordan. So the lot was made for the rest of the sons of Manasseh, according to their families, for the sons of Abiezer, and for the sons of Helek, and for the sons of Asriel, and for the sons of Shechem, and for the sons of Hefer, and for the sons of Shemida. These were male descendants of Manasseh, the sons of Joseph, according to their families. Translation. Let's make that simple. The sons of Manasseh were Makar, Abiezer, Helek, Asriel, Shechem, Hefer, and Shemida. Six in all. These were the divisions, six divisions of the tribes of Manasseh that the land was going to be divided into. All of these sons had lived in Egypt, and none of them were alive at this time. We're talking with their descendants is what we're talking about. So Manasseh's oldest son was Machir. Machir was the father of Gilead. Machir was not alive at this time. He had died long before in the story, okay? His descendants were, nevertheless, given by Moses the land on that east side, over here. So Manasseh's sons of Machir are over here. The rest of the other five are going to be divided in this area that is over here. Well, when giving the land to Machir Gilead, descendants of Manasseh, a problem occurs that had been addressed 5 years before by Moses, when Moses was still alive, verse 3. However, Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, the son of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, had no sons, only daughters. And these are the names of his daughters: Mahlah, Noah, Hoglah, Milcah, and Tirzah. And they came near to Eleazar the priest, and before Joshua the son of Nun, and before the leaders, saying, "The Lord commanded Moses to give us an inheritance among our brothers." So according to the command of the Lord, he gave them an inheritance among their father's brothers. Thus, there fell 10 portions to Manasseh, besides the land of Gilead and Bashan, which is beyond the Jordan, because the daughters of Manasseh received an inheritance among his sons, and the land of Gilead belonged to the rest of the son of Manasseh. This story is told over in the book of Numbers, and here are the highlights of that story. Then the daughter of Zelophehad, the son of Zephyr, the son of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, stood before Moses and before Eleazar the priest and before the leaders and all the congregation at the doorway of the tent of meeting, saying, "Our father died in the wilderness. Why should the name of our father be withdrawn from among the family because that he had no sons? Give us a possession among our father's brothers." So Moses brought their case before the Lord. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "The daughters of Zelophehad are right in their statement. You shall surely give them an hereditary possession among their father's brothers, and you shall transfer the inheritance of their fathers to them." So the writer described these borders here. If you remember, these daughters, they get the land. They're going to get the land. So with that, they've got land, they're happy. So but you notice there was a problem in these 10 possessions, 9 possessions, and all of that. So Manasseh is not happy. So the writer describes the borders of Manasseh here in verse number 7. Then the border of Manasseh ran from Asher to Mechmethath, which was east of Shechem. And then the border went southward to the inhabitants of Entapia. The land of Tapia belonged to Manasseh, but Tapia on the border of Manasseh belonged to the sons of Ephraim. The border went down to the brook of Kenab, southward of the brook. And the border of Manasseh was on the north side of the brook, and it ended at the sea. The south side belonged to Ephraim, and the north side to Manasseh. And the sea was their border, and they reached to Asher on the north, and to Issachar on the east. In Issachar and in Asher, Manasseh had Bethshean and its towns, and Ibeam and its towns, and the inhabitants of Dor and its towns, and the inhabitants of Endor and its towns, and the inhabitants of Taanach and its towns, and the inhabitants of Megiddo and its towns. The third is Nepheth. But the sons of Manasseh could not take possession of these cities because the Canaanites persisted in living in that land. It came about when the sons of Israel became strong, they put the Canaanite to forced labor, but they did not drive them out completely. It was against the law put through Moses. So from this passage, let me make it simple. Let me bring the translation down. It's got this land that is given to Manasseh, but Manasseh can't take it. Why? Because there are still Canaanites living there, and they haven't been driven out. Also, it's interesting that it's said here because it mentions the tribal areas of Issachar and Asher. That means this writer is writing after all these divisions have already been made. He's not writing as they're being made. He's writing after they've been made because he knows where Issachar's land is. He knows where Asher's land is. And he knows where Manasseh's land butts up next to it. And so when the text says in Issachar and in Asher, what it's saying to us is that the writer means that those were the borders and they had already been set by the time he writes this down. Now, with this, Manasseh all Manasseh could do was go and force these Canaanites, since they had not conquered them, into forced labor, and they never defeated them and never destroyed them, as was the instruction. They did not do what they were supposed to do. So the tribe of the Manasseh was unhappy, really unhappy, with the division of the land on the west side of the Jordan River. It was the difficulty of Manasseh that is addressed next. It starts with the statement to Joshua by the tribe that we hear here in verse 14. Then the sons of Joseph spoke to Joshua, "Why have you given me only one lot and one portion for inheritance, since I am a numerous people whom the Lord has thus far blessed?" What we have not noticed so far, but was indicated in verses 8 and 9, but it's hard for us to notice it, is that, and it says this, that this is the inheritance of the tribe of the sons of Ephraim, according to their families, together with the cities which were set apart for the sons of Ephraim, in the midst, catch this, in the midst of the inheritance of the sons of Manasseh and all of its city. In other words, all of this inheritance was given to Manasseh, and then Ephraim was carved out in the middle of it, and that is not enough land for Manasseh according to their reasoning. Now, this reason is difficult to find proof. And here's the reason why. In the very last census, only 5 years before, the combined total of inhabitants of Ephraim and Manasseh was no more than 59,000. My stars, the tribal group of Dan had 64,400, Issachar had 64,300, and Judah had 76,500. Now, Judah had a large portion. But Dan and Issachar did not get near as much land as Manasseh got. And Manasseh is complaining. So therefore, that allotment that went to Ephraim in half the tribe of Manasseh area alone, it was large enough to do what needed to be done with it. But Manasseh was unhappy. So they complained to Joshua. And then we come to the reply of Joshua. So here we have it. Here's what he said, verse 15. Joshua said to them, "If you are a numerous people, go up to the forest and clear a place for yourself there in the land of the Perizzites and the Rephaim. The hill country of Ephraim is too narrow for you." The original description of the land of Manasseh excluded, moved around the area. You see around this area here. They moved around the area of the Perizzites, which they had not conquered, where the Rephaim lived. Rephaim, the Hebrew word that means a terrible one. Rephaim means terrible one. Some have translated that to mean giants, but it does not mean giants. It has nothing to do to confirm that it's a giant. This is not the giants that were spoken of, that were people have alluded it to from back in Genesis about with the angels and men. That never happened. Those people are men of renown, because a text back there says they were men of renown. That means they were people who were powerful. The Rephaim means they were terrible people. So here we have this complaint to Joshua for the sons of Joseph, who would have included both tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh in that tribal area, and they complain. Joshua says, go clear out that land of the Perizzites and take it, that forest land, and they're unhappy with Joshua. The sons of Joseph said, "The hill country is not enough for us. And all the Canaanites who live in the valley land have chariots of iron, both those who are in Bethshean and its towns and those who are in the valley of Jezreel." So the Canaanites in this valley are already been mentioned in the list of the cities that were still Canaanite controlled. They've already been told us that these cities are controlled by the Canaanites. The valley is Jezreel. The towns were mentioned in 17 verses 7 through 13. It's Bethshean, Eben, Dor, Endor, Tanakh, Megiddo, which is the valley of Megiddo, and all of that. We've got all that. It's the place, that valley they're talking about is going to be called the Valley of Armageddon. What has happened in this story is what we have mentioned before. The writer told us the divisions of the land as it would finally be. Then he circled back around and gave us more details as how the land was decided upon and what the sons of Joseph had to do to obtain the land they wanted. Well, after the complaint to Joshua, we come to the decision of Joshua in verse number 17. Joshua spoke to the house of Joseph, to Ephraim, and to Manasseh, saying, "You are a numerous people and have great power. You shall not have one lot only, but the hill country shall be yours. For though it is a forest, you shall clear it. And to its furthest border, it shall be yours. For you shall drive out the Canaanites, even though they have chariots of iron, and though they are strong." So, Joshua did not change his mind, is what we find out here. The land that is still controlled by the Canaanites included the Perizzites that were not taken by the nation of Israel, and that is allotted to Manasseh for them to go get and to conquer. However, Manasseh would have to fight to obtain it. Do you catch that? Manasseh did not destroy them as instructed by the Lord, through Moses. They were supposed to do it. Instead, they just allowed the Canaanites to live there and forced them into labor projects for the nation. This, my friends, is going to continue to be a thorn in the side of the nation of Israel until they are removed from the land. And by the way, down in the Philistine area that we've talked about, they were not Canaanites, they were Philistinians. They were blood relatives of the Canaanites, but they were not Canaanites. Their names were changed to Palestinians, and to this day, they are still a thorn in the side of the nation of Israel.